At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. I'm really enjoying, and I hope you are as well, my conversation with Dr. Ibram Kendi and Mr. Joel Christian Gill, the authors of the new book, Stamped from the Beginning. It is a wonderful treatment of race and racism in this modern era, sort of getting us to reflect through art and narrative on the various storylines that exist out there in the world. I'm just really want to pick up on this idea of the extraordinary Negro, because it is something in my many years of experience that I've had to work around and deal with, as I know both of you have had to do, both professionally and personally. How does that idea of Black people, especially Black men, still persist in these times? When you have astronauts, physicists, mathematicians, yes, people in the arts, yes, people in sports, but this full array of talented African Americans who have overcome an enormous number of obstacles, the Supreme Court recent decision on affirmative action notwithstanding, to achieve and to realize the American dream, right? In the face of insurmounting and at times very difficult institutional biases. How is this view of Black people still relevant? I mean, I sit there and I listen to some of these white parents talk about, you know, young Black kids. And I'm like, have you talked to your kids? Who do you think they're hanging out with at school? Whose music do you think they're listening to? Whose clothing are you think they're imitating? Style, language, you know, whose history you think they're learning? I don't understand. Help me sort of cross that Rubicon in understanding why we're still considered extraordinary when we do very ordinary things.
Well, I mean, I think it is much more complex right now, because I think on the one hand, as you stated, there are all these African Americans who are in very sort of prominent positions demonstrating excellence. And I think that has resulted in this working theory that they're only in that position because they're Black, they are not excellent. They, you know, that's why the whole debate around affirmative action is such a politically salient one, because people want to believe that the primary victims, I mean, according to studies, most Trump voters believe that the primary victims of racism today are white people,
right,
who are being who are excellent and being prevented from climbing into those positions, and they
while not acknowledging the largest beneficiary of affirmative action are white women.
Exactly. Or even not acknowledging the mediocreness of their spokesman, Donald Trump. So yeah. it's hard. So then you have it creates the situation which you have those Black folks who have done excellent work and have climbed into those positions, who are being told consistently and constantly that they are not excellent. And then you have other people who are saying, no, actually, you are excellent. You are exceptional. I think it in both theories, just can't accept, like you stated, the normality of Black excellence. And I think it really positions those people in those situations in a very sort of difficult place.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Joel.
No, I was gonna say it's also really difficult because when you start looking at these ideas about the exceptional or the extraordinary, it doesn't take in consideration that Black people, like, we all have like a crazy uncle. Like, we all, like, we're like, I feel like we spend way more. I feel like when you start thinking about these things, I think that show Black Jeopardy that was on Saturday Night Live that came out a couple years ago was like the perfect example how like we are so much more alike than we are different. And then we spend all of this time focusing on these differences as if these things are insurmountable, because race is a rounding error. Right? Geneticists can't figure out the difference between two white people, find enough genetic difference between two white people, let alone Black people and white people. But we still walk through this world thinking that, you know, like if a Black man is articulate or a college professor, like if a 6 foot tall Black man like me, right, is a, you know, stocky built Black man, I should be a linebacker, right? As opposed to what was actually happening in college, in high school, which is I got a varsity letter in chess. Right. So like taking all of these things and sort of like stamping us, right, which is the name of the book, stamping us with this preconceived notion doesn't make any sense. Stamping us either as extraordinary or as like inferior. Right. Because those it's not a binary. We're not either or. Right. It's just like they're media. I got a cousin who's just mediocre. Right. We all got mediocre cousins, right? Like it's the thing that people do to Black women. Oh, you know, you're a strong Black woman, but Black women don't necessarily, they want to cry too. They don't have to be strong in the face of everything, right? But we place these ideas on them, whether they're, you know, positive affirmations or negative. And it's just like, I go back to Ralph Ellison because it's one of my favorite books, but it's just like, I want to be regular. Like, I just want to be a regular dude, right? It's why Jerry Craft wrote his book, New Kid, where it was about like, there's almost no racism in that book and it's getting banned all over the country. And he's just like, I just wanted Black kids to have like a normal time, right? Just to be like a normal kid.
But they can't accept that. That's the point. They cannot. What the hell is the problem? Why can't you accept the fact that a 15-year-old Black boy and a 15-year-old white girl and a 15-year-old Hispanic boy and a 15-year-old Asian girl can all have similar experiences and go through and enjoy and do what that one white child is experiencing and have those same experiences? I just don't understand this idea. It's so hard for some white people, because I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. So I'm just trying to understand why is it so difficult for some white folks to understand. And just so we're clear, when I was growing up, my mama used to identify white people in two groupings. One were white people, and you stayed away from them. And one were white folks. You could go to their house for dinner. And the difference was white people are out to get you. And that's all the white nationalism, the KKK and all. White folks are folks who hung out in the hood that you would go and visit. And they didn't run away when my mama moved to the neighborhood, right? So there were people who stayed and understood the journey and wanted to be a part of it with her. But that aside, why is it that you have this attitude that we cannot in any way be be normal, that someone like you, Joel, can play chess, or damn good at chess. You lettered in chess, but because of your size, well, that's a nice buck. We need to get him playing football or bouncing the basketball, because that's the limit of his talent. It's like when I went to high school, you know, back in the day, mid 70s, I was tall for my age at that time. I was 6 feet at 14, and that was big back in the early 70s. And so everyone had visions of my being a basketball player. Okay, sure. So I tried out for the basketball team. And after the first week, the coach pulls me aside, puts his arm around me and says, "Son, don't ever do this again."
Have you considered chess?
I went into theater. I did theater. I did theater and music. I sang. I was in the glee club, as we called it back in the day. And I did theater. I found my artistic side, and I went on to Hopkins. And guess what? I didn't play football or basketball. I was a fencer. And I was ranked pretty well as an epee fencer at Johns Hopkins, the Johns Hopkins University. But yet and still, whether it came to academics, where I was only at Hopkins because I was Black, or it came to anything else, it was preordained that I should do something that was sports related because I was a tall Black kid. This idea that forces and pushes the Black experience in one direction, I still don't understand why that persists to this day after all that we now seemingly know and have experienced from the Black experience in this country. What do you guys think of that? I'm enlighten me, because I don't get it.
It's pop culture. If you watch any of the murder television shows, you would think that the average murder victim in America is a blonde 20-something-year-old white woman. When it's a reality, it's a Black man between the ages of like 15 and 30, right? Like because we take the sensational thing and we take that sensational thing and we think that thing is the truth, we use that to be the standard. And I think that that's like it, more than anything else, it's, you know, this is why representation in movies matters. This is why those kind of things matter, because when you're always showing a thing, whether it's saying Black men are super predators, or Black fathers are absentee dads, or any of those things, like you basically are fulfilling the narrative, right? Because people hear it and they just think, oh, that's true, right? So when you hear a comedian make a joke about Black dad not being around, everybody laughs because they fall in line with this whole idea, but it just feeds that negative stereotype. When you hear, you know, Conscious Hip Hop talking about, you know, Black people need to pull their money together and do these things, like you hear all of these things, it's just like, yeah, that's exactly right. When the reality is completely different and way more complicated than that.
Yeah, Dr. Kennedy, on that point, there are strong voices in your narrative, the way you tell this updated version. It's much more interspersed with pop cultural references, colloquialisms, a lot of humor. Talk to us a little bit about your decision to add that aspect in this version, which was not so much a part of the first version of the book.
Well, I mean, I knew in working with Joel that not only was he an historian, but also he's a comedian as well. And I think being able to find that balance, obviously, I think was critical. And I just knew that this is a heavy history, right? The history of racist ideas is a heavy history, and I thought comedy and you know, comedic elements could allow people to get through. So I really was happy that Joel decided to use those elements and to lean on his own sort of humor to carry the story. And frankly, even when we think of the history of African Americans and the way in which they've been able to navigate the horror of racism, one of the ways they've been able to navigate it is through comedy, right?
Yeah.
Through laughing about something to stop from crying.
Yeah, it is right up there with the Negro spiritual. You know, it's the thing that over time, for many African Americans, became both a crutch and a cudgel to sort of deal with their circumstances in relying on their faith, because we were considered to be pagans and godless. So that you had to reinforce that for yourselves. And then, of course, you know, looking at your situation and just laughing at it, because otherwise you'd go out, I don't know, like some white folks we know, and start shooting people. But, you know, maybe they should try humor. I don't get it.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and Unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.